Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the news headlines out. Consumer spending dropped by 13.6% in April. Also, our economy shrank at nearly 5% annual rate there in the first quarter. We are in serious problems economically. And yet, I see really nothing coming out of this White House to help people deal with both the pandemic and, well, the chaos that might be coming. And sadly, the news not getting any better. In fact, the story that caught my attention this week that, you know, probably half of the jobs, close to half of the jobs that are gone aren't coming back. So you're looking at over 41 million people now unemployed, almost 41 million people unemployed, and half of those jobs might not come back. I'm here to share some thoughts on that. I've asked Pedro DaCosta to come talk with us. He's a senior reporter at Market News, also a senior contributor at Forbes, where he's got a new piece out. Millions of U.S. jobs are never coming back from the COVID-19 recession. Pedro, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So things not good. I mean, but I guess on another hand, not surprising, given the fact that, you know, we did kind of have everybody staying home for a bit of time. But I'm concerned we're never going to be able to flip the switch right back on.
That's right. It's not surprising, given that we effectively shut down the economy. So in a sense, the negative numbers on the economy are a sign of our success in public health. However, as you have pointed out on the show tonight and previously, the reason it got so bad in the first place is because of a lot of policy mistakes on the part of the administration, and really an ongoing lack of federal leadership as we quote-unquote reopen into a blind lack of planning. We seem to be the only major country without an actual plan for reopening. And so, you know, it is not a man-made crisis at its root in the sense that, you know, with the pandemic, but we're certainly making it a lot worse. And to your point, there's very little sense of urgency in the government to address, I think, the scale of what we're facing. I mean, we've had a fiscal stimulus, we've had some action, but I think we are in kind of a suspended animation where we don't really realize what a effective 25% unemployment rate actually means for society. And it's going to be pretty hard.
And it's the 25% of the unemployment number is who? I mean, we're seeing, you know, the most vulnerable communities already being most affected, minority communities and women. Overwhelmingly, you have, you know, especially single women, single mothers being affected by this as well.
Absolutely. It is, you know, people talk about COVID as the great equalizer. And, you know, sure, from a strictly medical standpoint, the virus doesn't discriminate between rich and poor, but boy, it's sure easy to eat, much easier to socially distance and to do all the things that you need to do and stay home if you have the means. And so, to your point, the job losses, actually, there's a statistic that Jay Powell has been cited, the Fed chair, which is pretty striking, that if you are in the income category of making $40,000 and below, you had a 40% chance of losing your job in March alone. And so we're not even talking about the April and May damage. And so it's pretty intense.
No, and it's pretty shocking when you look at, you know, this in the rearview mirror a little bit, you know, just how unequal our society is and how many people do make below $40,000 a year and just how vulnerable we are as a society to the mass inequality that's gripping our nation. And look, tonight the country is, you know, in many cities across this country in chaos and some places burning because, I would argue, because of that inequality.
Absolutely. I don't think you can divorce the undergoing from the deep-seated inequalities. And you can see that, by the way, that our country is reacting. I mean, the pandemic brings out the best and the worst in us. I've heard from very intelligent historians of pandemics. And so you can look at places that are rallying together as a nation because there was a sort of solid level of cohesion in the first place, and kind of willing to make shared sacrifices. even places that we think of, by the way, as fairly politically fractured. Like Italy is very politically, quote unquote, fractured state. You know, the government falls all the time. There are communists and fascists. There's sort of a wide range of political views. And yet when it came to an actual health issue, everybody just listens to the doctor, right? The Surgeon General equivalent is the only voice speaking. There aren't, like, you know, pro-reopening and anti-reopening people. You just listen to what the medical authorities say. And so I think this was the kind of level of social decay internally that we're only beginning to grapple with, as you can see on TV.
Yeah,
I mean, today the on-air arrest of the CNN reporter that I woke up to was something I'll never forget in my life. Just watching that.
So. No, I'm right there with you. I was literally shocked because the guy was like, "Hey, you just tell me where you want me to be. I got to do my job. You just tell me where I got to go." And they're like,
"Absolutely." But to the point that Bakari Sellers was making on CNN today, the fear that the reporter, you can hear in his voice and everybody else watching, because we know that even on live TV, even with the CNN badge, had one thing on slightly wrong, he would have been George Floyd. Right? And you could see that in the cop's eyes, too. And the fact that they even took that action knowing that he was a CNN reporter and that he was live on camera shows the level of emboldenment that you get when you have, you know, white nationalism in the highest seats of American power.
Now, I hadn't actually thought about going into this with you. I wanted to talk about the economic stuff. But you're somebody who's been all over the world, you know, to Latin America and places like that, where, you know, police violence is something that is kind of, you know, what we, I guess, as Americans expect. What we're seeing in the streets now, not something I think the average American expects to see, with sound cannons and you know, tear gas and, you know, tons of cops in riot gear with militarized vehicles rolling down the road. Is this a wake-up call for us as Americans, do you think?
Oh, man, it better be. It's really intense, right? I mean, we're seeing the kind of social breakdown of the United States, and something that I've been, you mentioned my background a little bit. I grew up in Brazil. I spent 10 years of my childhood in Rio de Janeiro, which is about the most unequal city and country in the world. And I always used to tell my American friends before the financial crisis of 2008 that inequality was terrible for everybody, even the wealthy, because you live in fear and of security and concern. So even if you're callous, you should care about inequality. And now we kind of have that same extreme here, you know, not quite to the same level, but certainly approaching it. And what you get is you can't get the same kind of social phenomena, right, of, reduced trust in institutions, including the police force itself.
Yeah, because I'm watching these videos and I'm watching, you know, the reporting coming out of Minneapolis and Denver and New York and now, you know, Washington and Atlanta. And you just see these police forces with these resources that, you know, look like you would expect to see in a battlefield, in some far off land.
Absolutely. Well, there's the whole phenomenon of the heavy militarization of the U.S. police force and the way that they purchase equipment literally from the military and procure it in ways that really, you know, are reminiscent of more of what we think of as developing countries of autocratic, militaristic kind of states. And so I think that we're going to have to strike a balance. You know, I think there's great opportunity for this crisis to create the kind of social safety net that you and I have been talking about for a long time that we've needed. And, you know, you and I were talking about it when the unemployment rate was at 3.5% and we still didn't have it. So imagine now at 25% or more, how much we need it. So I think the pain is going to be so deep that there's an opportunity for creating political consensus for, you know, social safety net reform that just didn't exist before, because guess what? The middle class is going to feel very poor. The quote-unquote, whatever remained of the American middle class is going to feel a lot more kinship with the poor than it previously did.
Yeah, you're going to get thrown off the treadmill. And maybe that's a good thing. I mean, maybe we need this as a wake-up call. I hate to see any suffering. I hate to see the chaos that's coming. But I look at this administration, and I don't see any I don't see anything. Their ideas are bad to worse. I mean, the idea of a payroll tax cut at a time when you have nearly 41 million people unemployed is just idiotic.
Absolutely. And not only that, but the lack of support for any kind of action on the states, I think is really, I think it's both really dangerous for the economy and also really telling of kind of Republican priorities and the lip service they pay, right? Because what is the ultimate GOP talking point, right? It's all about the states. Let the states take action. In fact, the lack of federal leadership has been excused in part by saying, oh, we can experiment. We have a federal system. Some states will try something. It's kind of how the system works, right? Well, guess what? If your state's resources are depleted to the point where you have to start firing first responders in mid-pandemic, things aren't going to end very well. And so this notion that the whole burden has been pushed to the states and then the federal government is somehow abdicating fiscal responsibility when it has the purse to fund that kind of thing, you know, because, as you know, states and localities have most often have balanced budget requirements. And so I think the state and local area is an area of action to watch, because I think the Fed has already been forced into some kind of action promising to buy municipal bonds. And I think that the government will eventually have to step in with rescue funds for states. But again, it's highly politicized. Trump has made it a blue state, red state thing, and we'll see how it goes.
And that's the thing that bothers me, because you know Trump wants to use this as a tool to punish his so-called friends punish his so-called enemies and help his so-called friends. So you know the blue states are going to get hammered, and they're going to continue to give even more resources to red states to have them squander them.
And by the way, Rick, this is another very perfect example of what I would call the kind of the active underdevelopment of America, like us becoming more like an emerging market, in the sense that, what part of what goes with that sort of derogatory sense of emerging market, the shithole country concept, if you will, to quote a famous president, the shithole country is a country that lacks basic trust and ethics, and where, like, basically it's about who you know, and no, it's not a meritocracy, it's about who you know. And Trump just emphasizes that to the nth degree, where people already know to expect it. And we've seen how the distribution, even to the small business loans, was not proportionate to, you know, the damage that states were suffering. A lot of the money went to states that were politically connected. So it's very dangerous institutionally on many fronts, but as you said before, we haven't, democracy hasn't fallen apart just yet. There is an election coming up, so.
Maybe. I mean, I'm looking at
exactly
this chaos in the streets right now, and this, again, I come back to the reality that this is the kind of thing that I've been saying for years Trump wants to see. So that they can do all of the things that people have feared, declare martial law, set elections aside, do away with the habeas corpus and posse comitatus and all of the things that they've been dreaming of for years to turn this into a truly fascist state.
Without a doubt. And actually, I mean, irony is not the right word, because I guess irony is dead, but the irony is that the pandemic itself already offered that opportunity, right?
Right.
But because that opportunity conflicts with his very short-term goal of, like, boosting economic growth into the November election, it doesn't quite work out. In other words, like, there's not going to be, like, the people who are out there, quote-unquote, liberating Michigan with guns, right, and should have been arrested on the spot, as your previous guest mentioned, because they're breaking the law, and I think you said this, they're endangering public safety. They're not actually protesters, they're violators. But guess what? That same contingent, I bet would be all for martial law if it was an anti-riot measure, right? Quote unquote.
No, you're right. And, I remember the conversation on election night of 2016 that I had with a conservative friend who said, it's going to be very interesting watching you guys turn into states' rights folks. because this guy's going to consolidate power. He's going to do all kinds of horrible things, and it's going to be chaotic. And this was a conservative saying we're in for bad times because of all of the tendencies that he saw coming out of Trump. And on a lot of veins, he was right.
Absolutely. And what we see ultimately, that there's no amount of like state leadership that can overcome a deficient kind of, leadership at the top, right? Because even the states that put in the beginning were success stories, like Washington, without the guidance and without the political backing to take the draconian steps that are sometimes needed, you just kind of cave. I mean, look at Andrew Cuomo. I don't think New York should be reopening to the extent that it is, right? I'm not a public health expert, but I listen to them, and what they tell me suggests that the kind of crowds that you get in New York are, not going to be good.
Yeah, nothing good. So let me ask you last line of questioning, because a lot of people are nervous this evening. A lot of people are worried about a couple of days, got to pay the rent, the mortgage is due. You're going to need to put food on the table. If you're saying in your piece, and a lot of other people are saying, half of these jobs that we've lost aren't coming back. There's probably more job loss coming. What's the way forward? Do you see some way forward given this administration's previous positions?
I mean, I do, in the sense that it is in its best interest, even in the very cold political calculus, do something to juice up the economy and to make people feel some level of improvement in their lives between now and November. And so that gives the administration a strong incentive to, even if they do it kicking and screaming, to reach across the aisle and work with some of the plans that, the Democrats have proposed and sort of bigger spending measures. And also there's safety in numbers, in the sense that, as I mentioned to you earlier about kinship between the poor and middle class, As the number of unemployed just soars into the stratosphere, the level of political consensus for the need for kind of massive support rises. And so while it's definitely super scary in the short term if you can't make the rent, but I think we can count on more fiscal support coming down the line. Because the economy is not going to recover anytime soon.
Let's hope so. But some of the things that I've been seeing, I mean, like the plunge in spending, they're saying for the month of April, 13.6%, plunge in consumer spending, but the personal saving rate is up 33%. So, maybe there are going to be people out there going to have money, and maybe that will be something that we need. We'll find out soon enough, won't we?
It turns out that little piece of data was actually, there was a little bit of a twist in there, because part of that personal savings rate spike is because of sort of social safety payments that have been made as part of the stimulus. And so,
right.
I wouldn't count on that jump just yet, but it's certainly true that we're going to save money in various different ways, right? Stay home. And so, it's not going to make up for the economic damage that people are suffering. But we do have an opportunity to kind of rethink just how fast we were barreling into nowhere, and maybe reshape our economy in a way that's a little less destructive when we reopen it.
That is the hope. Pedro, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the great work that you do. Keep it up. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks so much, Rick.
Good stuff. Our friend Pedro DaCosta, senior reporter over at Market News, also a senior contributor over at Forbes. Make sure you check out his latest piece, Millions of U.S. Jobs Are Never Coming Back from the COVID-19 Recession, over at Forbes. We'll get links out on how you can check that out. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.